So today's lines go like this. When silent illumination is complete, the lotus will blossom, the dreamer will awaken. The hundred streams flow to the ocean, the thousand mountains face the highest peak. Like geese preferring milk to water, like bees gathering the choicest pollen. When silent illumination reaches the ultimate, it penetrates from the most subtle to the greatest. So when silent illumination is complete, not finished, mind you, the lotus will blossom and the dreamer will awaken. Some, especially early on in practice, assume that because there is a beginning point of formal sitting, that this wisdom path must also have a middle phase and an ending. Eiken Roshi was fond of saying at each transitional point of practice, and now your practice begins. Of course, in many senses, it is always beginning anew. With each inhale, we are born, as are the stars and moon. We then come to that place of pause between the inhale and exhale, whether we notice it or not. And we live the entirety of our lives. We then exhale and each thing expires. And so we begin again. Each time new, fresh, and unfamiliar, even if we're feeling bored or flat or two-dimensional. Because at the bottom, you really don't know. You don't know where you've come from. You don't know where you're going. And you don't know, if you look very closely, who you are. This practice is never finished, and it continues out past this one life. What does it mean that silent illumination is complete? Each of the other translations I looked at said, when it is perfected, then the lotus blossom opens and the dreamer awakens. Hung Shui said, and this is cobbling together a few pieces from his practice instructions, he said, the field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. You must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. He then continued saying, many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. When the stains from old habits are exhausted, the original light appears. Further, when you turn about and drop off everything completely, realization occurs. So this is the practice side of silent illumination, which we can complete moment after moment. This is the side of sitting up straight, softening our eyes and bellies, and attending to breath, to body, to mu. This is the side of practice that when we slide into an old apparent habit, we can bring our calmness of mind and our sense of inquiry to see through the patterned behavior, the conduct, or mental formation. Apparent habits will arise, but in a sense, they are habits only because we take them so personally. We think they actually are us. But in reality, they are simply phenomena that arise, sometimes for no reason at all, and they endure for a piece of time. But when we bring our sitting mind to gaze at them, when we bring our sitting mind and not act on them hour after hour, they do lose their power. As we sit with these apparent habits day after day, maybe even year after year, we do begin to see through them and know them to be simply facets of the great dream of the Buddha. When we see them as such, it is easier to smile at them and to smile at ourselves. We may still indulge in the habit, but that seeing through and smiling allows us another entryway into our own vulnerability and into our own humanness. And this develops and deepens our compassion for ourselves, for each other, and for the world. As I said yesterday, and the text makes quite clear, in practice we need to develop the calm, stable mind called Sagara Mudra Samadhi, the ocean seal absorption, which was Shakyamuni's mind as he sat under the Bodhi tree. But this mind alone can become too complacent and flat. This mind can become too quiet and lose its engaged quality with the entire field of being and non-being. The quietistic mind can fall under the hypnotic spell of an empty numbness, a Zen sickness, a sickness that seems to appear primarily in male Zen students. This is why we need the other side of practice, the side of illumination or inquiry. This sense of inquiry drives in a non-forceful or imposing way our deep-seated desire to know and understand, to wonder, why suffering? The very question that sent Shakyamuni Buddha from his home and wife and child. Why death? Who am I? What purpose? What meaning? These questions drove our forefathers and mothers across oceans and mountains, through deserts and plains to find resolution. We don't necessarily sit with our question right before our eyes, but we can chew it like cud and ultimately let it dissolve into our bones and muscles, into our sinews and cells, and into our organs and guts. Allowing the question to be absorbed aids us in creating an exacting focus which is stabilized in the great mind of ocean. One aspect of practice, vast. The other, one-pointed, and both necessary. As we sit with open hands and both sides of practice engage silence and illumination, we forget ourselves, and at some point, maybe tomorrow, maybe in an hour, maybe right now. Maybe right now we forget ourselves and are confirmed by the myriad things, by the sound of a helicopter going overhead as we're waking from sleep, maybe by the sound of the white noise machine, maybe by the creaking of the furnace right behind my back. To be confirmed by the myriad things is to cast off the body and mind of the self as well as of others. Or as the text says, the lotus will blossom and the dreamer will awaken. In a verse in the Book of Equanimity, Hung Shui wrote, "The jade man's dream is shattered. One call from the rooster. Looking around on life, all colors are delightful. wind and thunder with news of events, roused out the hibernating insects. Peach trees, wordless, naturally make a path. When the time and season comes, laboring at the plow, who fears the spring rose knee-deep mud? So this is an interesting poem, one that I'll not comment on. But the first line, "The jade man's dream is shattered," offers us a different translation and understanding of the imprint of silent illumination. Our text says, when silent illumination is complete, the lotus will blossom and the dreamer will awaken. I think a more accurate translation is, the dream is awakened from. When silent illumination is complete, the lotus will blossom and the dream is awakened from. One wakes from one dream, the small dream that I am here and you are over there, to the great dream of the Buddha, the dream of intimacy. I'm not fully sure of this, but I remember, as though in a distant dream, that over the entryway to the Dokusan room at the Koko-on Zendo, there was a wooden plaque inscribed with the character, dream. This was done by Soen Roshi's teacher, Yamamoto Genpo Roshi, when he was 94 years old. I'll look this up after Sesshin, but I think the character for dream is Ku, which is also the character for sky. This is the great dream of sky, which when moved across leaves not a trace or trail, but allows and contains all. This is something to muse on. At 94 years old, a great teacher inscribed that character on a wooden plaque, and my teacher displayed it above the threshold to the Dokusan room. How come? Why? The Dokusan room is a liminal space that resides both in and outside of time. It is a dream space where Zhao Zhou, Yun Men, Miao Dao, Miao Zung, Hakuin, Satsujo, and a multitude of other great worthies regularly make an appearance, as do you, and you, and you and me. Hanging that piece of wood right there in broad daylight under the blue sky, I think, is preaching a dream in a dream. In the ninth month of the year 1157, Hong Shui visited old friends of the temple and those who had aided him in his work to say his farewells. On his return to the monastery, he bathed, put on his robes, and then he sat in the Zazen position and said his goodbyes to his fellow monastics and students. Before dying, he asked the Lin Qi teacher Tao Wei to take care of his personal affairs. And then he took up a writing instrument and wrote, "Empty flowers of an illusory dream, 67 years. A white bird disappears in the mist. Autumn waters touch the sky." He then put down his writing implement and passed away. It is said that his body stayed fresh for 7 days and then was placed in a stupa in the valley east of the monastery. He had 8 successors, although none of the lineages in Japan, the United States, or Western Europe trace their lines directly back to him. His influence, however, is obvious in Zen both from the Book of Serenity and a vast body of writings put together by his disciples called the Extensive Record of Zen Master Hong Shui, which is 9 volumes large. Empty Flowers of an Illusory Dream, 67 years. A white bird disappears in the mist. Autumn waters touch the sky. The empty flowers are our standing, sitting, walking, and lying down. They are our speaking and silence, our thoughts and feelings, our actions, and our apparent habits. These flowers are fragrant and not, colorful and plain, perennial and annual. In a sense, they are dream flowers growing, living, and vanishing in a dream. A synonym for empty flowers in an illusory dream is a white bird that disappears in the mist, and autumn waters that touch the sky. No traces, no tracks, no prints are left. And yet I imagine his friends and students cry tears, more flowers of emptiness, and felt the almost invisible imprint of his ways on their heart. Again, flowers of emptiness. All in a dream that takes place in a dream that we are continuing to inhabit here at Sesshin. When the dream of a separate, independent, substantial self is seen through, we enter the great dream of the Buddha. We then realize that the 100 streams flow to the ocean, and the 1,000 mountains face the highest peak. Each and everything, whether we notice it or not, flows into the great ocean. This ocean is the great mind of the Buddha, and we evoke this mind with the mudra we sit with in Zazen. We sit with our left hand over the right, with thumbs touching. And please pay attention to this mudra called Ocean Seal Absorption, or Sagara Mudra Samadhi. You'll notice when your thumbs loosen and stop touching, your mind too has probably slipped and is entering the small dream. If your thumbs are pressing together, you're probably pushing and trying too hard. Find that place of relaxed concentration, of focused mindfulness, of silent illumination, and sit in the serenity and depth of the great ocean. Sit in the serenity and depth of silent illumination, of your Zazen, and of the great Buddha dream. If all streams flow into the ocean, then in a sense they are never apart from the ocean. This means no matter who you are or what you are never too far from that ocean, and you are naturally moving in that direction, and at the same moment, you are always already ocean, completely wet, all the way through, and each of us flows in a different shape or form or color. And our task here in Sesshin and our joy is to realize that fact, that you are never too far from the ocean. You are part of the ocean, and you are at the very same moment, ocean. Eiken Roshi said to us on more than one occasion, at the head of each stream, at your fountainhead, lives a tutelary spirit in which resides your genius or your unique talent. That talent might be singular or multitudinous, but what naturally happens over time in Zazen is that the uniqueness of the Dharma position you inhabit becomes clearer and your expression of it more evident. This talent might be very simple. It might be how you attend to things, how you attend to your life. It might be how you care or love or enjoy. Or it might be how you talk or walk, or how you cook, clean, or chop. It might be how you attend to this moment. And this moment. And this. But we each have that spirit who resides at the waterway's genesis. We each occupy a unique Dharma perspective, and it all flows naturally and emerges into the great ocean, into the great dream. There isn't one thing that isn't water. There isn't one thing that isn't a dream. And like geese preferring milk to water, like bees gathering the choicest pollen, it is something that naturally occurs. This means we can trust our practice and we can trust our lives. We do not have to make our practice go in the direction we think it should. We do not have to manage or direct it. When we consciously direct or manage, we leave out all the hidden, all the unknown, all the not imagined, and severely limit the great ocean of possibility. When we can open our hands and attend to practice by letting mu do mu, by letting the sounds fill who hears, by allowing the numbers to count you, then the great dream of the Buddha can be your very own dream. We naturally seek this dream. We desire it, and we yearn for it. And it is dreaming itself right now as it looks out of your eyes. So please, enjoy your dream.